Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome back to the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Fade Noise, Adam Pfeiffer here. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Joined by Joe Metz. Kyle Murray filled in on Saturday night's podcast. Joe back with me to break down this five-game slate on Monday. Joe, what's up, man? How was your weekend? We had a lot of sports. There was the Christmas Day basketball, the Christmas Day football, Saturday football, Sunday football. A lot of sports over this past weekend.
Yeah, it's been good. I'm hoping the Bills can close out my fantasy championship in the one league I'm still clinging to life in. So once fantasy football season wraps up, like, I probably will just put NFL completely behind me and just focus on NBA, because Christmas Day slate, it was fun. It got me more excited for the season. But overall, I think the outcomes of the game were a little disappointing. I don't think there was one really close game. But slate tomorrow looks great. We had a good slate on Sunday. We actually had a 9-game Sunday slate, which was fun and unusual. But looking forward to breaking down the 5-game Monday slate, which, you know, we've talked about slate size. This is one of those sweet spots for me.
Yeah, and you'll have the articles on Monday, the game-by-game article and the five stats to know. And in case you're new, Joe and I will be alternating that every day for the entire season. Yeah, let's get right to it. I mean, there's five games, not a ton, but there's a lot of news to go over. We'll start with Detroit at the Atlanta Hawks. Total for this game is currently at 225, with Atlanta as 9-point home favorites. Atlanta's looked really good so far this season, and now they're facing a shorthanded Pistons team, as they're going to rest both Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose for this contest. Danilo Gallinari with a foot injury, meanwhile, for Atlanta is questionable. He didn't play over the weekend with the foot injury, so we'll see if he can get back in there. And Sekou Doumbouya for Detroit is probable. So the Pistons, I mean, going to be really shorthanded here. They have two relatively high-usage players that they're going to be without. I mean, smaller sample size, but so far this season, Blake Griffin's usage rate, 24%. Derrick Rose is pushing 28%. And Derrick Rose is a guy, yes, he's coming off the bench, but he has the ball in his hands often and for a pretty long time. You look at his, so far this season, his time of possession per game, it's at almost 8 minutes. So, like, he has the ball in his hands a lot, so how do we view the Pistons on this slate? There's definitely going to be some value. Meanwhile, Jeremy Grant is 5,900, coming off a really great game. Still seems like a price tag you can attack in a favorable matchup. Plus, he's going to, you know, get a lot of more rebounding opportunities and just more touches overall.
Yeah, agreed. I think Jeremy Grant is option one here, especially because, you know, we had a disappointing first game when you and I were both pretty high on him. But he really showcased on Saturday what Detroit paid him to do. You know, I don't expect that offensive output to be something we see every night, but I mean, he played 42 minutes last game in the overtime game against the Cavs, shot really, really efficiently, attempted, I want to say, like 6, 7, 8 threes. Like, he was shooting a lot from beyond the arc and had a nice double-double. Like, I expect, I'm not going to sit here and say I expect another 25 and 10 game, but I think for 5,900, knowing that that is well within the range of outcomes, is something you should focus on. I also do, though, have a lot of interest in Josh Jackson. Off the bench, he's already gotten a lot of playing time. He actually outplayed Jeremy Grant in the first game, and obviously with Blake Griffin out, I expect him to pick up another 5, 7, 10 minutes. And on the season, again, small sample size, but he's averaging 1.13 DraftKings points per minute. So for his price at 4,200, I don't think you can go wrong there. So those two, and Josh Jackson and Jeremy Grant, would be my focal point of the Detroit offense. Where are you looking for this team?
Yeah, I like Josh Jackson too. Can play that point forward role off the bench, yep, and kind of handle the ball. And, you know, because when he comes in off the bench, he is playing alongside Derrick Rose and, like, Svi Mykhailiuk. But without them, like, unless they're going to give Sadiq Bey more, like, substantially more run, I think Josh Jackson pretty much plays backup point guard in this game,
yeah,
for a lot of it. And that's going to be extremely valuable. I don't hate Sekou Doumbouya at 3,400 either. He might get to, like, 20 to 22 minutes potentially in this game. He's only 3,400, but obviously you feel a lot safer with Josh Jackson.
What about Killian Hayes? Like, do you, I mean, obviously he starts. He's a starting point guard for this team. He wasn't necessarily sharing the court a ton with Derrick Rose, but you got to think he'll get a bit of a bump in playing time without Rose filling those backup point guard minutes.
Yeah, I'm still not crazy about it. Like, the matchup's obviously great, and he's at a price where it's, you know, it's not that high of a risk. But I don't know, I think I feel better about Josh Jackson's permanent production at the same price. At small forward too. It's, you know, a position that can sometimes be a lot more difficult to fill. And this slate definitely is. I mean, you look at the small forward options in the slate. You have LeBron, who we'll talk about it. There's a chance he could rest. And then you have Caris LeVert, Michael Porter Jr. Like, you don't have a ton of great small forward options on this slate. So any of the, you know, power forward or center options would break out. Mason Plumlee's been starting. He's played 32 and 33 minutes. He's been right at 33 fantasy points, or right around 30 fantasy points in each of his first two games. Blake's been, like, not rebounding well, so we've seen Plumlee get 8 and 9 rebounds, and he's always been a good assist center. He's 5,700. Like, he's not, like, at a discount, or he's not overpriced. He's just kind of fairly priced. And then maybe Jahlil Okafor, but he didn't practice on Saturday with an ankle injury, so they could be even more shorthanded, where, like, their front court, I mean, Jeremy Grant might have to play 40 minutes in this game if it stays close.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, with Jahlil Okafor, so he exited the game Saturday, missed practice Sunday. I have a hard time believing he suits up, and if he does, I wouldn't expect him to be playing in more than anything but a limited role. So I think that obviously opens up more minutes for Jeremy Grant at the four, but I also think that helps you stomach Mason Plumlee's price, because obviously $5,700 for Mason Plumlee is not something DFS players are used to. His role in this team, though, is obviously something we aren't used to as well. I mean, he's producing a fantasy point per minute, has a 24% assist rate, 16% rebounding rate on the year, so he is doing a lot of productive stuff in categories we're not necessarily used to. So I think there is merit there, but for me personally, I would obviously rather take the savings with Josh Jackson or get $200 more to get Jeremy Grant, because I'm certainly not playing three Pistons in my lineup. I think I would then open up some Plumlee shares, though, if Okafor was to sit.
All right, let's go to Atlanta. Trae Young's been fantastic through two games, 9,500 on DraftKings. He's gone for 36 and 37 real points in the first two games of the season. This game could definitely blow out, but, like, are we at the point yet with the Hawks where we're like, okay, they're a team that is going to blow a team out, even with them being shorthanded? It's possible. I mean, they're a much better team, but Trae Young obviously has as much upside as pretty much anybody on the slate. And then you have the fact with Danilo Gallinari potentially out, that could definitely help potentially keep this game close, or close for long enough where Trae Young can play as close to his normal minutes. Gallinari did not play over the weekend, and Atlanta ended up starting Trae Young, John Collins, Cam Reddish, Bogdan, and DeAndre Hunter. So I would expect the same starting five here if Gallinari's out again. We know Bogdanovich is a high-usage player. He's 4,700. That kind of sticks out. He played 32 minutes last game. It wasn't really great, but he had 9 rebounds and 2 assists. He shot 2 of 10 from the field, but he's taken 22 shots in the first two games. He's only 4,700. I like him quite a bit here if Gallinari is rolled out again.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think in that range, it's going to be interesting to see. I think the masses, and rightfully so, will go to Bogdanovich at $100 less, but I really like DeAndre Hunter too. He really played well, especially last game. 35 minutes, had a shot 5-11 from the field, also posted 11 boards. Like, he played really well, and the minutes to me is what stuck out, especially with so many capable wings on this team, with, you know, Bogdan, Hunter, Huerter, Cam Reddish, and the bunch. So he should be in line, assuming Gallinari sits, for a similar workload, and against a Detroit team with virtually no depth right now on the wing or the forward, I think that is a good spot to target. I also think this is a great spot to target John Collins. His price went down a little bit, or actually I think it might have stayed the same. Only played 27 minutes last game because he picked up 2 early fouls, which obviously threw a wrench in the rest of his game. But this, I mean, not that Detroit wasn't a front court we target previously, but now they're down Blake Griffin, and potentially another big body in Jahlil Okafor, who obviously is not someone you rely on for their defensive capabilities.
I hope he plays for John Collins because he is so slow to defend the pick and roll.
He's really, really
and Collins,
slow.
And Collins led the NBA
in the perimeter.
Yeah, and Collins led the league in points per game as the role man last year. It probably won't be as evident in their offense this year when you have Bogdanovich and others added, but it's still going to be a huge part of Collins' game, especially as long as Clint Capela is still out. Detroit allowed the fifth most points per game to the role man out of the pick and roll set last year at 8.7 per game, and the sixth highest field goal percentage at just over 56%. Collins is going to have, he's due for a ceiling game. And like you said, the first game, foul trouble. Derrick Rose drives to the basket at a huge rate. He's not going to be there to induce fouls. Like, I don't see anybody in this team that you worry about getting the free throw line to get John Collins in foul trouble here.
No, I don't either, to be honest. Everyone you're looking at on the Detroit side, Collins should be able to handle in the post, so I don't think it's going to be a problem. I also, to your previous point about the blowout potential, like, I think the potential's there, but I think to your point, I don't know if Atlanta's a team yet that you worry about, like a Laker team, like a Bucks team, that when they are in a blowout situation, they're going to quick to pull their stars, just especially because this team is so young. And they're not, this huge guarantee to get a top five seed in the playoffs and move on to the second or conference finals. So I think they're going to do whatever they can to win every game, as long as if that means, keeping starters on the court. So I like the Hawks a lot. I would like to think they can control the pace of this game, but obviously, as you know, these are two very, very different teams in terms of pace. Detroit, one of the slowest, Atlanta, one of the fastest. So I think that does bode well for the value in Detroit, but I also, I don't see it being a problem for Atlanta because I see them controlling the pace of the game most of the time.
All right, anything else from this game?
No.
Memphis and Brooklyn. This game is in Memphis, I believe. Let me double check. No, it's in Brooklyn. Memphis at Brooklyn. Nets coming off the second end of a back-to-back. Or front end of back-to-back, I should say. Is there a chance we see Kevin Durant or Kyrie sit in this game? It's possible. We kind of have to just keep an eye on that with a lot of these veterans this season.
I think it'd be one of the. I think it would be similar to a Lakers situation or Clippers, where it won't be both.
No,
so obviously,
not.
If one does, I think we'll obviously get into this game as we go. But the pace of this game, if one's out, I think that would make the other one of the best plays on the slate.
Gotcha. So, yeah, it's matchup aside, it wouldn't really matter. If one of them sits, you just play the other guy. But it would also really impact guys like Caris LeVert or someone. If, Caris LeVert
especially
would be,
with Dinwiddie, who left the game and did not return because of a calf strain.
It was a knee.
Or knee strain. I don't think he's going to play. I mean, I obviously nothing's been ruled, but if he didn't return to the game today, I highly doubt he's going to play tomorrow.
Yeah, and if he's out because he's been starting, do you think LeVert still stays off the bench just to have that guy off the bench that can come in and get buckets for them? Or do they just move Kyrie back to the one and just kind of move everybody up? Harris plays the two, LeVert the three, and then Durant at the four with DeAndre at the five. Or do they, put in, Landry Shamet to start or somebody else and keep LeVert off the bench? Either way, LeVert would become a lot more interesting at 6,600.
We've also seen LeVert's the one that gets blowout run too. I think that would only increase his safety. I think he'd take a bit of a hit if he starts, but I don't think in a situation where, Dinwiddie's out and potentially one of Kyrie or Kevin Durant sits, I don't think there could be much that would take me off of him tomorrow.
So this game's kind of simple. Just make sure you're following the news. It sounds like Dinwiddie could easily miss this game. And we know there's a chance that Durant or Kyrie sit. Whoever sits, just play the other guy. They'll profile as one of the best plays of the slate. And I still can't get to the centers on this team yet. Jared Allen, he's going to max out at 21, 22 minutes, and he's priced like he's playing 27, 28 minutes. I know he's an efficient player, but I can't do it with this timeshare right now.
Agreed.
I had interest in Joe Harris on Saturday or Sunday night. His price went down to 4,900 in that game. Now his price went down again to 4,600 in another matchup that isn't terrible at all. Maybe get some more shot attempts from him with some of these guys potentially out. Let's see, there's 6.5 minutes left in this game. Brooklyn's actually losing to Charlotte, by the way. Joe Harris has 11 points in 25 minutes. So, I mean, 4,600, you know he's going to play 30 minutes and potentially more with Dinwiddie out. LeVert, by the way, his minutes have obviously climbed with Dinwiddie being out. He's played 26 minutes so far in this game. Anybody else from Brooklyn?
From Brooklyn, not really. I think this is going to be a game, like you said, pending news. Hypothetically, both stars play. I think LeVert would still be the individual I have the most interest in because, I mean, you look at what Brooklyn's done in their first two games, not including the game last night against Charlotte. Like, these stats from yesterday, aside, because obviously recording the night before, we don't have the final numbers from this game, but they've been by far the best defensive unit on the season, which comes as a bit of a surprise. So the blowout, if there's any game on the slate that carries blowout potential, this is the biggest one.
Memphis, Ja Morant's off to a really good start this season. 8,300 on DraftKings. He scored 44 and 28 real points. A lot more aggressive, 27 and 21 shots. And like I talked about, I believe it was before the season started. Remember, this is a guy that was in his rookie year maxing out at around 32, 31 minutes. And now we've seen him play 35 and 34 in his first two games. So that's huge for him. No Jaren Jackson, obviously, so they're going to need him to be aggressive on offense. I think he's perfectly fine here at 8,300 if you want to go that route. I believe this team started Grayson Allen last game. It was Morant, Grayson Allen, Kyle Anderson, Dylan Brooks, and Valanciunas. So looking at the rest of this team, you kind of know what you get from Kyle Anderson, although his rebounding has been massive the first two games.
Yeah, I think he had 13 or 14 last game.
Yeah, he had 14 rebounds. And that lineup that I just mentioned is pretty small. Like, Morant, Allen, Brooks, Anderson. Like, Anderson's playing the four in that case, which I'm not saying he's going to get 10 rebounds every game, but that's obviously giving him a lot more rebounding opportunities, which just in general helps him because we know he's not a high usage guy, although he did take 15 shots. Like, it was just kind of one of those games for him. But, like, if he's getting these rebounding opportunities and playing a lot more power forward, then that'll help him if he's having a game where he's not involved offensively. So, thoughts on Memphis? You have Kyle Anderson at 5,100. Jonas Valanciunas, we've targeted centers against Brooklyn for a little bit now. He has been solid in his first two games, double-doubles in both of them, 38 and just about 40 fantasy points. But he's a guy who, even like we know his Toronto days, it was like 22, 23 minutes, and he was always super efficient. And even with Jaren Jackson Jr. out, like he's still not going to play 35 minutes, most likely.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that is why he profiles. And you and I talk about it almost every time Memphis is on the slate, how he is arguably the best center in terms of GPP pivots, just because his massive, massive upside. My only concern is if this game does get out of hand, he'll be one of the first to sit. Now, looking at Memphis, Ja Morant, like you said, I don't think there is much negative to say about him this year just because of how good he's been. Defenses have been really keying in on him. I watched the game against who did they play Saturday? I'm blanking on this.
Memphis? They played Atlanta.
They played Atlanta. Atlanta was doubling him every time he approached the perimeter, but the Memphis offense made a really, really, really efficient and good point once he got the ball out of his hand to continue. Like, there was not one possession I saw where he's standing in the corner just letting Dylan Brooks go ISO or something. They're doing everything they can to set off-ball screens, to move around just to get the ball in his hand, especially late in the game. He is their closer at the end of the day. So I think 8,300 is a great price for him. If I'm looking elsewhere on Memphis, Kyle Anderson, I have a ton of interest in because of his role and his increased involvement on the glass this year. But I also really like Dylan Brooks. Like, he sometimes can be a bit of a one-dimensional player, but I mean, in that Atlanta game, he only shot 35%, but he shot 23 times, and he has a 26.5% usage rate on the year. Like, for someone shooting that inefficiently to still be averaging a fantasy point per minute is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And I don't think his price really reflects that.
And 11 of those shot attempts were threes, which is obviously more appealing on DraftKings. I just realized Grayson Allen started the first game too. He started both games. You're not going to get a lot of peripherals from him either. He's 3,800. You could probably do worse if you don't love the value at that shooting guard position. But Can he do better? There's a good chance he could, but he could also do a lot worse than Grayson Allen, who's starting and probably going to play 27 to 30 minutes at the minimum.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, Valanciunas in tournaments, like, I always like playing him because there's always the worry that he's not going to be hyper-efficient in his 30 to 31 minutes, but when he is, you know, he's never going to be super popular either.
Yep.
Anybody else from this game we haven't touched on?
Looking down, not really. I think it just all obviously hinges on the Brooklyn situation. I don't think someone like Landry Shamet or Jeff Green or someone down in that range would become viable unless, like, if Durant sits, Jeff Green has more merit. If Kyrie sits, there's a chance Shamet has more merit, but it obviously all depends.
Davante Adams with 2 first half touchdowns. He's absurd.
Shocker.
Love having him on my third place team because I got unlucky in the semifinals and my team's going for 200 points in the consolation round. Super fun.
Just slap in the face.
But I do appreciate Green Bay beating Tennessee because I need Buffalo to win tomorrow night and hopefully get that 2 seed in the AFC. All right, Utah at Oklahoma City up next. So it took forever, but we finally saw this Thunder team in action on Saturday night. They obviously couldn't play their game that was scheduled for Wednesday due to coronavirus issues. But, you know, we saw them. We saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander be the guy, had the ball in his hands a lot, almost triple-doubled, and hit the game-winning field goal. He's 8K on DraftKings. Injury. I don't think we have any injury news from this game, so pretty straightforward here. We've seen, and we'll probably continue to see, some value open up with the Thunder until we kind of see who's separating themselves from the rotation, because they're playing a handful of guys that just, quite frankly, weren't really fantasy relevant last year because they're just going to complete rebuild. Talk about the Thunder here.
Yeah, I like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander a lot, just about every slate. I don't think 8,000 flat, regardless of matchup, is quite enough where it would really warrant a fade just based off his ceiling alone. We've seen year over year, you know, Utah is a stout defensive unit as a whole, but there are holes to attack, and point guard is one of them. So I think he's in a great spot. My concern, though, again, is if this game gets out of hand, is he going to get 35 minutes? Probably not. I still see him doing damage, obviously, in 29, 30, 31 minutes, though. Outside of Shai, like, this Thunder team's tough. Like, Darius Bazley had a really solid game. He's been playing a lot of minutes this season. Lou Dort is getting a lot of run, too. I think of those ancillary players, though, George Hill would probably be my favorite. The price bump is going to deter people. He was a popular cash game play on Saturday, but shot 8 of 9 from the field. He's never going to reach that 30-minute range as a starter, but he still played 24 minutes. I think you can do worse for 4,500, especially at a guard position right now that is kind of starving for value, unlike the front court where you have the Detroit situation. So outside of Shai, like, George Hill is probably my favorite. I would consider Bazley and Lou Dort. But while Utah's defense does have holes, it's not a defense I'm going to go out of my way to attack.
Yeah. I don't hate Al Horford at 6K. He should be way more consistent in terms of rebounding, playing the full-time five for this team. And, like, with Rudy Gobert on the other side, he should have to play more than 29 minutes. Like, Charlotte went small last game with P.J. Washington at the five, so that might have, you know, allowed them to play small on the other side with Horford playing less minutes at the five, but that shouldn't be the case here. At 6K, he could easily have, like, a, you know, 35-point fantasy game because he only took 5 shots in that game, but he had 13 rebounds, he had 3 assists. Like, between him and Bazley, I would rather play Horford. But they both averaged 16. They both had 16 rebounding opportunities in that first game. But I think this is a game where we see more playing time for Horford. My second favorite play from the team is probably Dort. I just think 4,300 is a nice price tag for him because he's going to have he might be, outside of SGA, the safest bet for minutes on this team, which, because this is a team that, like, you know, the reason George Hill's not going to play 30 minutes very much is because they're rebuilding and they want to see what the younger guys have. So George Hill is fine, but, like, that is a concern for me with him. I like Dort. I like Horford a decent amount. And, yeah, SGA, like, we know what the upside is for him. I have no problem with him. Is he my favorite play on this slate? Probably not. But it's until he gets priced up to a point that's egregious, it's hard to say he's really ever a bad play. He averaged 7.5 minutes of possession in that first game. So they weren't lying. I mean, he touched the ball a lot more, and he's going to continue to do so for the Thunder. Utah, on the other side. Donovan Mitchell, $7,600. Seems like a really fair price tag for him. He's taken 23 and 16 shots in his first two games. He's only made 12 of those shots, 39 shot attempts. So the shot hasn't been there, but we know when it's on, he can break a slate. And this Thunder defense obviously isn't anywhere close to as good defensively as they were last year. They just lost so many guys. Talk about Utah. Utah's weird because all last year, pretty much, they were injured. It was Conley was hurt.
Yeah,
Bogdanovich was hurt.
Rubio Clarkson was on, he was hurt. Like, there was guys all over the place.
So they're healthy for once.
Yeah, I agree. I think Utah is never a team, that I go out of my way to roster. And it's always a tricky team to roster because, like, they typically are priced at a point where you're banking on a ceiling game to get you that 5X. Like, Donovan Mitchell is one player that I don't think I've ever gotten right outside of the playoffs in DFS. If I'm looking at this game, I think my number one option would be Rudy Gobert. He feels a touch cheap. He's been dominating on the glass this season. He's averaging 17 rebounds a game right now. And obviously the Thunder front court, while Al Horford is a big body, 2 years ago he was dubbed the Giannis Stopper, which is the dumbest nickname in the world. But he's not Steven Adams in the post, especially on the glass. Like, Rudy Gobert is not like the quickest player in the world, but he's quicker than Al Horford. He's bigger than Al Horford. He's going to dominate Al Horford. Like, I think Rudy Gobert would probably be my favorite play on this team. But outside of him, like, I understand Donovan Mitchell in a tournament. I don't know if I go Mike Conley. I always have rested interest in Bojan, but his price is kind of creeping up to a point at 5,600 where he really needs to be hitting his shots efficiently in order to pay off value. Like, he's been rebounding at a higher clip than we're used to, but at the end of the day, like, based on his body of work, he is typically a more one-dimensional player in terms of scoring. At his price, like, if he shoots like he did last game where he shot under 20%, he's not going to hit value. Clarkson's probably another interesting piece at 4,900. He'd get blowout run. He's going to command usage with the second unit, and he does play some backup point here and there. So I don't mind Clarkson, especially if you're scripting your lineup with this game getting out of hand.
Yeah, and Bogdanovich, he's not a big peripheral guy, but he's at where he's always priced in between that, like, $5,400 to $5,600 range, and he just kind of fits lineups as, like, the last guy. You'll get the minutes from him, and you'll get shot attempts, which is fine. All right, last two games. This one obviously has a lot of interest because it's Houston, and the Rockets, we saw they were super shorthanded on Saturday night. James Harden went off, Christian Wood went off, and they're going to be shorthanded again because John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Eric Gordon won't be available for this game either. Same goes for Ben McLemore. So Houston at Denver, I mean, James Harden was pretty much, other than only having 4 rebounds, he's back to being James Harden, 44 points, 17 assists, 79 fantasy points, 11-2. He should probably be 12K given the circumstances in Houston right now.
If you're playing cash, I think James Harden is a staple. I mean, he helped David Jones win 100K.
We should have mentioned that, by the way. Shout out to David Jones, Tenacious D. Monster lineup. What do you have, like, four? He scored like 430 points.
445, I think. Because that overtime, I think he had James Harden, Christian Wood, and
Daniel Housley. And he had Garland, or Drummond. He might have had Garland, too, but yeah, I know he had Drummond in that 2 overtime game for Cleveland.
He had Chris Paul, who had, like, 55. Like, this was, like, if you envision a perfect scoring lineup, that was it, and that's why he won 100K. So shout out David Jones. You're a stud. I'm just going to pass on the Tua giveaway.
Yeah. James Harden, by the way, in that first game, he had the ball in his hands for 12 minutes total.
Holy cow.
He had 112 touches.
I mean, and he was in that, like, 90 touch range last year. I mean, we expect that, though. Like, what, they run 9 total guys. One of them was Bruno Caboclo, who played 4 minutes. Like, they ran an 8-man rotation, if you exclude Caboclo, which I am. There's no reason he's not going to dominate the ball. Like, he averaged 1.82 fantasy points per minute. Usage rate was insane. He was at about 65 fantasy points before overtime. In tournaments, if that game didn't go to overtime, you would have been okay with a fade and cash. You probably needed him. But in a 5 minute overtime, he put up another 20 fantasy points. And that speaks volume to his hyper efficiency and hyper involvement in this offense. So I don't see any way I get around James Harden. I don't recommend people do either. Christian Wood is another player that, like, I, regardless of his $1,300 price increase, like, it's warranted. 1.2 fantasy points per minute last game, 29 or 28% usage rate. He looked really, really good alongside Harden. He really didn't, like, in that game, 43 minutes for a big man is a lot in today's NBA. I know it was overtime, but, like, they are going to lean on him with DeMarcus Cousins out, and he's going to make his money. Like, I absolutely love these two again. They'll be popular. It, to me, I'm curious what happens with the rest of the team with, you know, after Nwaba started, Daniel House disappointed, Sterling Brown was so-so. Like, what are you doing with the value pieces of Houston today?
I have no problem going right back to Daniel House. His price really didn't move.
Yep.
He's going to have to play 35 minutes at least in this game. 4,800, so he went up $100. Like, I have no issue going right back to him. Obviously, Harden and Christian Wood are going to be super popular, but for good reason, and it's hard to get off them.
What about, like, Jayshon Tate? 38 minutes last game, shot 9 times. He's gonna get time in the front court with Boogie out.
Yeah. Like, it's at this point with Houston, until these guys are back, it's really hard to just say, I'm not playing this guy. Like,
that's fair.
You could almost make the case for anybody. Denver, I mean, we know this Houston team's depleted. They're going to give up points. I think Nikola Jokic is too cheap at 9,800. He's been fantastic through two games. Triple-double in the first game. One rebound shy of a triple-double in the second game against the Clippers. Huge minutes from Jokic, which is awesome. I mean, 42 in the first game. That game went to overtime. But then 38 on Christmas night. Just, you know, the safety's there. He's right back to what he was last year in terms of touching the ball like 100-plus times a game. Jamal Murray is priced way down to 7,100. That's really enticing.
This is a price I want to target him at. Like, he was, what, $8,500?
I believe he was 85, yeah.
Like, this is the sweet spot for Jamal Murray where he can absolutely obliterate his price tag.
Yeah, easily. And then Michael Porter Jr., still not the safest player, but I think I saw Jokic said they need to get him more touches, which is pretty interesting.
Especially when someone's saying that as the main facilitator on their offense.
Yeah, and he will be able to, you know, dish those touches to him. Like, the ball's gonna be in his hands. So that's definitely interesting. We know the tournament upside's there. We also know there's some downside. He's still starting though. Will Barton coming off the bench, still playing like starters minutes, but 6,200 for him. Like, I'd rather just play Michael Porter Jr. I think if both of these guys hit their ceiling, Michael Porter Jr. can break the slate. Will Barton gets you like 35 or 40.
I think in that situation, I think Will Barton, if you gun to your head, you have to pick one of the two. Will Barton's a cash play. I think MPJ is the tournament play.
Right. I agree.
What about Paul Millsap?
Yeah. I was going to ask about him. Like,
again, I was much higher on him after the first game, obviously. But I think my concern, I think this is what we're going to see out of Paul Millsap all season. Like, there are going to be games where he plays 29, 30, maybe more than 30 minutes. And he does enough, given his track record. He's never going to be priced higher than probably $5,500 throughout the year. But you also have to expect those games where he will play 17 to 22 minutes. He won't be involved. He's not going to take many shots. And he's not going to hit the glass because he's really just out there as a fifth starter. I don't think I'm going to go here with Jeremy Grant a little more expensive. I'd rather have Josh Jackson in my forward spot for less. I'd rather have Daniel House in this game for $500 less. I just don't think you need to go here, and I don't think he's safe enough in cash.
Yeah, I agree. I would much rather have Daniel House. I play a lot of tournaments, so like, what is the upside for Paul Millsap? Like, 30?
Mate, I think that's generous too.
Right. So, this game's definitely stackable, though. Like, Houston,
yep,
led just by Harden, is going to keep these games at least somewhat competitive. We know Jokic is going to have a nice game on the other side. Jamal Murray, I talk about all the time, but, like, if you're stacking this game, you can pair Murray and Jokic together, get that correlation off the dribble handoff, and run it back with Harden, Daniel House, whoever. Like you said, I just don't think I don't think Denver has the athleticism in their front court to match Christian Wood. Like, Michael Porter Jr. does, but he's also a terrible defender, so I don't really care. And then Jokic and Paul Millsap, like they don't have a shot. Mm-hmm. So, yep. Yeah, this game's obviously super enticing. We'll see if James Harden continues to dominate like he did last game. Closing it out with Portland at the Los Angeles Lakers. Anthony Davis rested on Saturday or Sunday night. It might have been some of the calf bothering him too, but with it being the front end of back to back, probably more likely that it was rest. Could LeBron sit this time? Yeah, especially because Frank Vogel talked about him wanting to limit his minutes a bit in the regular season, keep around that 32 range. But right now, under the assumption that LeBron will play, he's still 10K on DraftKings. Davis is 10-1. Trez got priced way up to 7,500. I mean, we'll see what his stat line is at the end of tonight on Sunday night, but assuming Davis is back and LeBron's in, like, it's going to be hard for me to pay 7,500 for Montrezl Harrell on a slate where we talked about Christian Wood, who's cheaper and just has a way more established role. Like, I don't see, and I love Trez, but like, give me John Collins, give me Christian Wood. Like, it's just, I know Christian Wood's a center, but it's just going to be really difficult for me to get to that price range.
I agree. And a lot of it has to do with who's around him. Like, I'd even go, again, center. I'd go Rudy Gobert for $100. Yeah.
Why did he get a $1,600 or $1,400 price bump, but Schroeder's price didn't move?
No, you no idea.
It's kind of weird.
And it's interesting, obviously, this slate being published before the game today, like when his role, I mean, he plays a lot of his minutes alongside Anthony Davis, but you got to think he's going to pick up a handful of extra touches without AD. So his production, I guess, yet last night has no bearing on his price for this slate, but it's a price that I'm not really willing to pay. If I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at this game, assuming Anthony Davis and LeBron are both going to play. If that is the case, I would definitely have interest in Anthony Davis. 10-1 is always an appealing price for him. Obviously, it would be hard to get all the way up to him, assuming you're playing James Harden. But Portland is a defense you want to attack with a big like Anthony Davis. I think LeBron has merit, but I'm sure you'll agree, Adam. Like, it just doesn't feel like LeBron has his foot on the gas yet.
No. And like I wrote
Frank
about
Vogel's
it.
Even said they're going to like stagger in quote. Like, obviously, yeah. He's going to play 30, 35 minutes, but it's going to be 4-minute bursts here and there. I don't know.
Frank Vogel loves Dennis Schroeder. He's been talking him up for so long. There's already reports I saw that about them extending him. Like he loves Dennis Schroeder, and like LeBron is not going to become just a low usage player or anything. Obviously, it's not going to happen. But with Schroeder starting at point guard, there's so many times where he's bringing the ball up and everything. Like LeBron was playing point guard last year. LeBron's not playing point guard right now. He's back to playing point forward. Like, he's not starting at the one. And that's going to hurt his usage and his touches. And it's like, they didn't have a guard to take the ball away from him last year. Rondo was in and out of the lineup, and he's not a guy that, you know, he's obviously more of a facilitator where Schroeder can average 20 a game on a lot of teams in this league. Then you have the fact that you still have Anthony Davis, obviously. LeBron's minutes might be down by 4 or 5 per game this year, and Schroeder is going to be a guy who touches the ball a lot. So it makes LeBron a little bit less appealing in fantasy right now. Than in years past. Not that he's ever really an awful play, but when they're priced together, I just want to go to Anthony Davis, and he's only $100 more. Portland's post defense was pretty bad last year. I know they added, you know, some players, but Enes Kanter is not somebody I worry about defensively. So it's Anthony Davis for me. I'm not playing Kuzma at 6-1. Like,
I think Schroeder is also there for me too. Especially like, he's in that range similar to Boyan that we talked about earlier. Like, if he fits, this is a player I'm comfortable putting into my last spot. Like, I'm not going to be like, do I want to play him? Like, he has a legitimate ceiling at this price. And again, this game has potential to get out of hand. Portland's not a team that's been blown out this year yet. But we saw it last year, a decent amount. Like, this team can forget to play defense, for lack of a better word. So he will get run. He is a closer. I like him and Anthony Davis a lot. What about the Portland side of the ball? Are you interested at all in Damian Lillard at 10-3, or are you kind of just foregoing him given the players around him?
I really never have a problem with Lillard, but 10-3 is a lot.
That's like bubble Lillard price.
Right, and McCollum's still there. I know Melo's not going to play in this game. That really doesn't change much for me. I'll probably have some exposure to Lillard, but like Trae Young is significantly cheaper. Kyrie, Ja Morant, like he's not a must play or a core play for me or anything like that. And then McCollum obviously had a huge game last time out, played 44 minutes in overtime. His shot was on, and look, when his shot's on, we know he can have slate-breaking potential, but 8,100 is a tough price tag for me to go to him when Damian Lillard's active. It's just kind of been the way it was. He didn't have a huge ceiling alongside Lillard last year. Maybe that changes this year, but what about Enes Kanter at 4,300? We know he's a high-usage player. He's nearly double-doubled in both games. Melo's out, so like they could go with a bigger lineup here with Nurkic and Kanter against Gasol and Davis. Any merit to Enes Kanter if he can get to like 23 minutes? Because we'll have other values on that at that position at that price, but
yeah,
Kanter has like legitimate upside.
No, he does. I think I don't want to say he's in the same permanent production company as the former filler of this role in Hassan Whiteside, but we've seen year over year that he is an elite permanent producer. So this price, I get it. Like, I like the idea. I just don't, for me, especially because he's obviously only center eligible, will I need to go here and will I want to go here? Like, if you're not playing, if there's obviously no other centers you want to play on the slate, I get it. Or unless you're double playing the position, I get it. But I just don't, even on a 5-game slate, I don't know if I need to go here, really. I'd argue I have a lot of interest. If we're talking about centers in this game, like Yusuf Nurkic's price is really, really, really enticing at 6,800. He's not safe. I don't think he's safe, but like he has a massive ceiling. Like I would argue if you look at players in this price range, he would have the highest ceiling.
I mean, how many centers can triple-double in the NBA right now? Obviously, Jokic. Domantas Sabonis is a triple-double threat. There's not that many. And I think Nurkic is one of them.
I think he is, too. And what's, like, I think he did in the bubble, didn't he?
Yeah, he's had triple-doubles before.
Okay, like, I mean, again, upside's there, like we talked about. I don't think he'll garner ownership whatsoever, either.
Yeah, that's a good call. I kind of skipped past him as we were continuing to talk about Lillard. Real quick before we get out of this game, just because we won't be able to talk about it again. If LeBron is ruled out, do you go back? Do you play any Kuzma at 6,100? Again, we haven't seen what the Lakers' stat lines are tonight, but we know Kuzma's starting in place of Davis. Do you get to any Kuzma? Do you get to any? Obviously, it helps Schroeder a lot, who's perfectly fine in general because he's still just 6,100. But like, do you get to anybody else? Like, nobody else would really benefit, in my opinion, other than
Schroeder and Kuzma.
Yeah, like, it probably makes me feel worse about Wesley Matthews if I wanted to play him, but I'm not playing him anyway. Any Kuzma if LeBron's out? Again, he's 6,100.
I don't think so. That's just I've talked about it every time the Lakers on the podcast. I just can't stomach his price until I see consistency and warrant and merit for that price. I think that would make Dennis Schroeder hard to fade just because he would have a ton of ball handling responsibility thrown on his shoulder. And then obviously it would make the slate really, really interesting to see what happens with Anthony Davis and his ownership with James Harden on the slate. Like if LeBron's ruled out, there's going to have to be a good amount of value that pops up in order for people to fit both. People might swallow really, really bad value, or the ownership on Harden could come down for the $1,100 savings on Anthony Davis. So I think there could be a lot changing with LeBron potentially ruled out. I would still, for what it's worth, I would personally still go with Harden.
I agree. I understand LeBron's out, but that's one player out compared to the Houston Rockets still having like a 6-7-man rotation. So I agree. Anything else from this? I think we covered most of it.
No, that's just about it. Quick slate.
Yeah, it's 5 games. There are some moving parts, obviously. There should be a decent amount of value, even though we only have 5 games. And like I said, you'll be covering the content for the articles. Of course, you'll have Eddie Fear's live stream, all the other articles, Tenacious D. I mean, how are you not reading his articles? His lineup was pretty much his
shot. He optimized his bank shot article, and that was it.
Right. So if you're reading his article, you're getting the plays that he's using, and could be you winning $100,000. I think it was $100,000.
Yep, it was.
That seems like a significant amount of money, possibly. But I
could buy you a whole lot of Davante Adams and Josh Allen jerseys,
dude. I'm ready for tomorrow, for Monday night, because I'm rocking my Color Rush Josh Allen jersey I got for Christmas. Ready to go.
Okay, I was ready for tonight because I wear my new Giannis shirt, but we're down 25 to the Knicks right now. So
yeah,
I'm gonna go to sleep.
Milwaukee's down 20 plus. The Sixers, yes, they're out on Embiid, but they're down 20 plus to the Cavs, who are about to be 3-0. All joke aside, Cleveland's not going to go anywhere this year, but they look fun this year because Garland looks good, Sexton's still playing well, and Drummond's like good. Like they're going to be probably a below average to bad team when it's all said and done, but they're pretty fun. I'm enjoying watching them for the first time since LeBron left. But that'll do it for us. 5-game slate. Check out all the content at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily. It was weird, man, because I had the Sunday content and. Like, for the first time all year, Saturday night, I was looking at football stuff, and I was fine with it. Like, yeah, I still love football, but I'm in basketball mode. Once it gets here, it's hard to just kind of get me off it. So, podcast will be up every day this week once again. Joe will be joining me because this is his podcast as much as it is mine, but we'll be trying to get guests on. You know, Stefano, Kyle Murray, Fast Eddie Fear, Javi, anybody from the Daily Team, Kweisenberg.
We should probably get David Jones on here.
That would be smart. he's probably somebody that would offer a lot of value for sure. Rolling hot after his $100,000 night, monster outing from him. Congratulations. Hopefully that's you next. Best of luck on Monday's slate. Let's start the week off right. Have a good one. We'll be back on Tuesday. Peace out.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.